This is David Getoff, and over the last quite a few years, I have had so many people that have asked me questions about iodine, and so many people that have basically been given such incorrect information about iodine that I finally decided it was time for me to make a recording on my website on iodine. So here it is. The first question is, do most people need to take extra iodine? Are most people deficient in iodine? And my answer is definitely yes, that most people, I believe, are deficient in iodine and would benefit long-term, whether they'll see a difference or not in their immediate health, I have no idea, in taking an iodine, some type of iodine supplement. Now, that being said, there's a lot of other information that has to be taken into account. First of all, if somebody wants to get an iodine test done, I would suggest they get a regular, ordinary lab test done from LabCorp or Quest or one of the other labs that does standard blood tests for iodine level. I do not accept the normal values or the norms that the lab publishes for the proper adequacy of iodine in somebody, but I do accept the testing procedure to be able to take a look at it. I have said over and over again in my lectures, in my courses, in my seminars, that with the exception of iron, which is a nutrient that we can easily have too much of, and which the normal values I also don't like, but for other reasons, in general, the norms listed on a blood test, when they apply to a nutrient, so we're talking about the norms for vitamin A, for vitamin D3, for vitamin B1, B2, B3, B6, B12, you know, many of those, magnesium. Many of those normal values I disagree with. Now, for vitamin D3, actually the range, the upper end of the range is fine, the lower end is the problem. But this is not a lecture on vitamin D3, so I will drop that. So, again, we go into the normal values for the range for iodine. I would say that in order to have adequate iodine so that your body has the iodine it needs to be able to take up its proper, appropriate place on all the receptor sites in the prostate, in the breast tissue, in the ovaries, in the thyroid, most likely, I don't know that we'll ever be able to prove this, but most likely you need to have your iodine test come back so that your level is in the top 10 to 20% of what they call norms, or as much as 20% above what they call norms. Why is that? That's because normal and healthy have absolutely nothing what to do with one another. When they test a bunch of people that do not appear to be sick and are not on drugs and don't have a current diagnosis, and they take those values that they have and say, these are all normal, that may very well be, but you have to understand that in the United States, it is currently normal. This is 2015 now. We're in the end of July. It is currently normal and probably will be for decades to come for you to die of heart disease, cancer, complications of diabetes. Those are three conditions for which it is normal for you to die of. And so I choose not to want to be normal because I don't want to die of any of those. And so the normal ranges no longer apply to my goal because I don't want the normal results. So again, I would say the top 20% or so, or up as much as 20 or 30% above the top range. Certainly the top 20% or as much as 20% above the upper end of the printed normal values of iodine would be what I would consider to be acceptable, normal, healthy ranges. So that's the beginning. Now, one of the reasons that we don't get enough iodine is because our soils are deficient. I've gone over this in many other lectures, but in a nutshell, we keep on putting in the NPK, nitrogen, potassium, and phosphorus, that's on the fertilizer bags. So we're putting in the three elements that are most necessary in order for a plant to look good with absolutely no care whatsoever for the fact that these plants are being grown for an animal, generally humans, to eat the plant, and we need way more than just those three minerals. And so we keep planting these plants, all of our crops, in the same soil year after year, decade after decade, And the plant takes out the trace minerals, and the trace mineral content of the soil gets lower and lower and lower. And we put back those few macro minerals the plant needs to look good. And so the trace minerals, such as iodine and many others, end up getting much lower than they were when the first crop was grown there. And so all of those animals eating those plants, in other words, humans, are getting a diminished amount of all of the trace minerals because we're no longer putting them back in the soil. Now, obviously, in some really good types of organic growing, biodynamic growing, or really good organic growing, we do put, we, the people that do that, do put back a lot of soil amendments, which is what they're called, which do, in fact, have a lot of these in there. So if somebody is using soil amendments such as shrimp and crab shells or composted different types of kelp, usually called kelp meal, that's one of them, or different types of seaweeds, which is what the kelp is, then the iodine actually is coming back in again. But again, this is only upper-end, non-commercial, the really good, smaller organic farms and the biodynamic farms. So most people are not getting enough iodine. Now, if you happen to love seaweed, like a lot of the Asian populations, and you are consuming arame, hiziki, dulse, nori, hopefully I'm pronouncing them all correctly, then maybe you are getting enough iodine. That's very possible. If you consume a portion of seaweed with most of your day's meals, or even with one of your day's meals, then that might bring in all the iodine you need. But most people, of course, don't do that. So that's why we're deficient. Now we have to address the varying amounts that people are telling the public that we need to be getting, and why I believe that we have a major problem here. Let me begin with the amounts of iodine that I have found in my practice that most of the people I work with would benefit by adding in as an additional daily supplement to those supplements that they already take. I find that most people, and I'm talking about adults, so I'm talking about people that weigh between 110 and 200 pounds, that most adults seem to benefit by, as I said, the addition of iodine, and that the amounts I use in most cases vary between 0.75 milligram, and that's usually referred to as 750 micrograms or mcgs, that's 0.75 milligram, or up to as much as 2 milligrams, which would be 2,000 micrograms. That's the general range that I use with my own patient population and that I recommend to my students. 0.75 milligram to 2 milligrams a day. And it varies from person to person. And I really don't think anybody would be able to overdose on those amounts. There's a small possibility that if somebody suffers from a hyperthyroid, overactive thyroid condition, or some of the forms of thyroid conditions that are called autoimmune conditions, such as Hashimoto's disease or Graves' disease, there's a possibility, I don't think it's likely, but it's possible, that even doses of 0.75 milligram to 2 milligrams might cause an issue. And if I'm working with somebody that has an autoimmune condition or a hyper overactive thyroid condition, I will start them very slowly. I will start them usually on about 0.33 milligram, which is approximately 300 to 350 micrograms. And I'll have them take that once a day with one meal, usually in the form of an NOW kelp capsule that says on its label how many hundreds of micrograms that it has, and it's somewhere around that much for one capsule. It's called NOW kelp capsules. And I'll have them take that once a day for maybe a month or two before I slowly raise it to maybe 2 capsules, and then we'll see how much higher we have to go after that. If there's any issue, of course, we drop it back down again. The big problem here seems to be three people, and they're all doing pretty much the same things. Dr. Brownstein, although he's simply following the works of Dr. Abrams and Dr. Fletches, and Abrams and Fletches have published many articles. I forget offhand, I could grab one of their articles. I have many of them here. I forget if one of them is an MD or PhD or whatever. That's irrelevant. I've told people over and over again, credentials are meaningless in every single occupation. There isn't a single occupation in which credentials mean more than knowledge. Knowledge is what matters, and if somebody knows more than somebody else, and somebody puts them down and says, where did you get your MD from? I just laugh. Because if somebody is right, it doesn't matter if they have no credentials, and if somebody is wrong, it doesn't matter how many credentials they have. So I don't remember whether they're MDs or some other doctors or PhDs. I know Dr. Bronstein is an MD, and I know Dr. Bronstein. I've spoken to him many times. Very nice man. I like him. But again, as far as what the three of these people say having to do with iodine, I massively disagree with their premise of how high the dosing should be of their patients in the public. And I'm going to go over all that now. I may be a lot of people say I'm a little bit wordy. On the other hand, a lot of other people say, yeah, but it's because you explain everything so well. So quite a number of years ago, Fletchis and Abrams published one of the first articles in which they were recommending what I consider to be massive doses of iodine to the general public, and assuming they're both seeing patients, or either of them is, their patients. I don't know whether they currently see patients. As well as a method of testing, which I also totally disagree with, having to do with determining how much iodine has in their body with a urine test that we will cover, other than the standard blood test. And what they based all this on, and I've read a number of their articles, was a couple of things which a medical doctor that I highly respect and really like a lot, Alan Gaby. He's done a lot of lectures with Jonathan Wright together in the long time, they've been doing it for many, many years, seminars that they've put together, of which I've attended quite a few, called Nutritional Therapy in a Medical Practice. I have gone through many of their training programs, and I highly respect Jonathan Wright and Alan Gaby. And Dr. Gaby has come out rather violently, and I think appropriately so, in some articles that he published in a number of places, including the Townsend Letter for Doctors and Patients, against the reasoning that Abrams and Fletchis say that people should be using this test that we're going to describe, and that they should be using massive amounts of iodine. And I've looked into what Dr. Gaby has said, I've looked into what Abrams and Fletcher said, and I am wholeheartedly on Dr. Gaby's side in most of the things that he's saying in this regard. So let's take a look at this a little bit more in depth. What Abrams and Fletcher have said, and I forget, I think Fletcher developed the test. I forget which one of them developed the test and how they came together on all of these articles they've written. But that really isn't relevant. The point is that they have people on very high doses of iodine, such as 12.5 milligrams a day, when I don't have anybody over 2 milligrams a day. And they're using a product that I believe is 12.5 milligrams for one tablet called Iodorol, which I therefore do not use in my practice. I use the kelp caps. I use a liquid called nascent iodine at various levels. I use another liquid called Iosol drops from TPCS manufacturers. But I do not use Iodorol because it's way, way higher a dose than I would ever use, even though, again, these supposed experts continue to promote the use of Iodorol. So, again, let's take a look at this in a little bit more depth. There was apparently a study done many, many years ago. I never looked at the actual study, but it's not really relevant. Abrams and Fletcher looked at the study, and they decided, this is great. These people that published this research on this study had determined that it might be a good way to figure out how much zinc somebody needed. That's what this original study that they sort of mimic or duplicate with their iodine study, that it might be a good way to tell how much zinc somebody needed by giving them a large amount of zinc, do not know how much was used in the study, and then collecting their urine for a certain number of hours, don't remember whether that was 6 hours, 8 hours, and taking a look to see, in comparison to how much zinc they were given, how much did they excrete. And the hypothesis, which I have a big problem with, and I'll be discussing why, was that if they didn't need at least 90% of the amount that was given in this large dose, in medicine that's often called a bolus dose, that they would therefore excrete over 90% of it over the next not too many hours, showing that they didn't need it. And again, Abrams or Fletcher, I forget which one, maybe both of them together, looked at this and said, wow, that would be a great way to test for iodine. Let's use that for iodine. And they developed an iodine loading test where somebody would take a certain amount of iodorol tablets where they're getting, I think it's 2 tablets, if I remember correctly. Again, the amount doesn't matter. But if it's 2 tablets, that's 25 milligrams of iodine, which is a huge amount. And then they collect the patient's urine for a period of a number of hours. And their hypothesis was, like the zinc test, which was also a hypothesis, I might add, that if they excreted over 90%, or maybe they said 90% or above, of the iodine over the next, again, I forget if it's 6 or 8 hours, that would be the indication that they didn't need extra iodine. But if they retained more than that and did not excrete at least 90%, it meant that they needed it. And this has always been a hypothesis from the very beginning. So first of all, they're basing it on a test that was hypothetical and that we don't know if it's valid. That's a bad idea, especially with iodine, where you might be able to hurt somebody with too much. Second, they are basing it on an amount of hours to look at the excretion afterwards, which has already been proven to be false. There's at least one researcher that I read an article on that did a very good job, where he said, I wonder if the idea might be legit, but that the body takes more than that limited number of hours to excrete the extra iodine. So in his little study of a bunch of people, he used, I believe, the same bolus doses that they were using, which, again, I believe is 25 milligrams, 2 iodorol tablets. And he collected the urine, my memory serves me, for 24 hours. And he found that over the hours past when all of Abrams and Fletchis and David Brownstein are collecting the urine for their test, large additional amounts of iodine were excreted. And so if you wanted to even base your possibility on their hypothesis, which I still say is faulty, then the body doesn't hold it that tightly, and it takes quite a bit longer for it to be released. So you'd have to look at 24 hours worth, and over 24 hours, lots and lots of people excreted way more than 90%. So they're already looking at too short an amount of time to collect the urine to determine that somebody needs more iodine. So even if we were to use that test, and I don't like it, we should really collect the urine for 24 hours and take a look and see whether 90% or more comes out in 24 hours, not in the 6 or so hours that is being used. That's not my big issue, however. My big issue is that the body is not like an electronic machine or a computer. Just because it doesn't need something does not necessarily mean that we should expect or assume that it has the ability to get rid of it. And although this might be a little bit of a strange comparison, what I would say, and I actually gave this idea, I think it was Dr. Fletchis I was talking to a number of years ago, I said, in order to validate this, and I don't think it would validate it, and of course we can't do what I'm about to say because it would be unethical, but nonetheless, if you were to take a number of people and give them a bolus dose of either arsenic or mercury or lead or nickel or cadmium. So I'm purposely taking, or fluoride or chlorine. I'm purposely taking toxic substances. It is my belief, and I would put money on it, that the body will not be able to expel over 90% of it because we aren't able. And therefore you would say, oh wow, they needed some of these, when in fact all we found really was that the body sequestered it out, as it does, into different tissues to get it out of the bloodstream, and it wasn't because it needed it, it was just unable to expel all of it. And when I said that, I believe it was Fletcher I spoke to, he said, huh, that's interesting, and ended the phone call. Don't think it ever got any further than that in his mind. So that gives you an idea of why I don't like the test, why I think the test is invalid, and a couple of things having to do with the body that I think don't work in the way they presume they might. Now we have a couple of other issues. They also used an invalid method, Dr. Gaby went over this quite clearly in a couple of his articles, of giving a reinforcing, a way to reinforce that they thought people might need this much. And they looked at some research done in Japan to see some average of how much, by weight, of seaweeds, of kelps, seaweeds, the Japanese eat on a daily basis. And they figured, well, let's take a look at that. And of course, we don't know how much research there is, how valid it was, but they looked at some. And they took the weight of the seaweed, and then based on that, they did a calculation to determine approximately how much iodine might, because it varies from seaweed to seaweed, how much iodine might have been in that weight of seaweed. And they showed, to their satisfaction, but not to mine, and I will tell you why in just a minute, that the Japanese seem to often consume that much iodine every day. And so it couldn't possibly be bad. It must even be a good idea. The problem, as Dr. Gaby so marvelously set forth, was that they used the weights of fresh seaweed in the way a lot of the Japanese consume it. And then when they went to take a look at the amount of iodine that was listed in varying amounts of seaweeds, they were using the amount, they were using weights that were of dried seaweed. So as an example, they would look at a research study, and I'm going to make these figures up because I don't know what the study said, but they would look at a research study, for example, that said that the Japanese consumed 3 ounces. And again, I'm making these numbers up, and it probably wasn't in ounces, it was probably metric. But they consumed 3 ounces of seaweed a day on average. And then they took a look at the amount of iodine in 3 ounces of dried seaweeds, mixed dried seaweeds, and they found that that had a huge amount of iodine. Well, yeah, 3 ounces of dried powdered seaweeds, whether it's dulse or nori or any of the various arame, hazuki seaweeds, that's got a tremendous amount of iodine in it. Why? Because nobody would ever eat that quantity of dried seaweed. When you eat 3 ounces of wet seaweed, what is most of that weight? Most of that weight is water. If you evaporate all the water and you get dried seaweed, I don't know what the ratio is, but again, let's guesstimate it. Let's say that the seaweed is 90% water, and I would guess that would probably be pretty correct. So 90% of the weight went away, but none of the iodine went away. So when they take the weight of 3 ounces of dried seaweed and say that people ate that much, when really they ate 3 ounces of wet seaweed, most of which was water, they're giving a tremendously higher amount of iodine to what they're claiming the Japanese were eating than was really correct. So we have an invalid way to test that was just a hypothesis based on some zinc study. We have the fact that somebody has already proven that if they were to, instead of testing for like 6 hours, which I think is the test, they would test for 24 hours, they would find the body does in fact excrete a lot more of the iodine. So many of the people that they test and go, oh my goodness, you held on to most of this iodine, we have to give you lots of it, you need it. In fact, excreted a lot more if they continue to collect it for the rest of 24 hours. And we have the validation they used that some group, a rather large group, an Asian population, already consumes this amount because of totally incorrect calculations on dry versus wet seaweed and on the amount of iodine in dry versus wet seaweed, you see that we have massive problems. Now, I haven't mentioned this yet, and a lot of people think that this is nonsense and bogus, but kinesiology, muscle testing, no matter what you may think of it, is one method of determining whether an individual person's body is benefited by a substance. And in addition to doing lab tests for iodine amounts and putting somebody on a small amount of iodine and checking their labs again, I will also do muscle testing. I find that it helps me in my practice get quick answers. And they very, very often, almost, matter of fact, almost always, correlate to the lab tests. And I've never had anybody test for an iodorol tablet. Most of my patients test for 2 or 3 of the kelp capsules from NOW, and as I'm recording this, I'm in my office. I'm going to go over here and grab those products so I can make this tape a little bit more accurate. So at the moment, they have changed this in the past. At the moment, an NOW kelp capsule, and it's called Kelp Caps, has 325 micrograms or 0.325 milligrams of iodine per capsule. This is NOW's product code 2675. And again, I have people usually take two or three or four of those, depending on what they test for and their body weight. Nascent iodine, which is the other product I mentioned, distributed by LL Magnetic Clay in Livermore, California. Each drop is 400 micrograms or 0.4 milligrams, and most people test to take anywhere between one and four of those drops. And then Iosol, I-O-S-O-L, which is made by TPCS Distributors in Irvine, California, that's a much higher amount. One drop of that has 1.83 milligrams. And I do have a very small number of people that end up testing to take anywhere from a half a drop of that product all the way up to a full drop of that product, which would be almost 2 milligrams. But those are the products that I use. Those are the doses that I use. And I just wanted to tape this because of how many people believe, because of Dr. Brownstein's books, because of Abrams and Fletch's articles, that they should be on very, very high amounts of iodine. And I believe that long term this is hurting people. This is my opinion. And I believe that more accurately, just to take a look at facts, their reasoning for the Japanese using that much is incorrect, and they don't. Their method of testing is a hypothesis that I believe is incorrect for the reasons I've said, and that the amount of time that they collect urine for makes the test even further invalid. And so now, in a very wordy way that I generally do things so that you can get all of my opinions and ideas, that's the reason that I do believe everybody, pretty much everybody, maybe not some Japanese population, some Asian people that still do eat enough seaweed, but that almost everybody would benefit by iodine. I've seen a lot of benefits. I've seen people that within as little as 1 month or as much as 3 or 4 months of just taking as little as a milligram of iodine a day, their fibrocystic breast pain goes away. All sorts of things can be benefited. Their thyroid condition is benefited. So now you have all my reasons, and I hope you enjoyed learning.